the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my left is Rob Arbatier.
Hello, Mike.
See, I decided to mix it up.
Yeah, nice. Caught me off guard.
That's right. And next to him, we've got Andrew Sheps.
Hi, Mike, and I don't like going clockwise.
Let's start again.
Across the table, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hello, Mike.
And last but not least, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hello, Mike.
Oh, you take the third.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
And today our guest is Dave McNichols, who's a drummer and plays with a band called Potato Salad. Dave.
Hello. I can't do an English accent, so I'm just going to use my own voice.
Which is good. Dave has a great story. He's a drummer for a band, Potato Salad, and I was listening to their CD. Great drummer, by the way.
Good band.
It's a jazz fusion and really melodic, has some really good riffs. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. First thing I want to start out with is I'm about to show you guys something. This is a Pro Tools rig using the Micro M-Box, and I have a little Sony UX micro PC.
That's amazing.
It's just really ridiculous, and I'm gonna take a picture of this. But this is Pro Tools
on the
little thing, and this is actually a session for a museum piece.
How do you press play?
It's space.
Oh, there you go. Smoking. Hasn't speak, is that supposed to speak?
No. You have to monitor through the
what a brilliant little thing.
We talked a little bit about this when we first heard the press release, but actually using it, it's a brilliant little system. It really is. It adds a lot of functionality to your laptop. It adds a lot of functionability to dead time if you need to do something really quick. Like Andrew said, though, it is limited to 2448. So if you work in 96, you're kind of out of luck.
But you got to cut it a break. It's the size of your hand.
It is. It is so tiny. And if you want a quick, easy way to get into doing audio, I mean, you cannot beat the micro with a laptop. It's just, it works so well. The only negative, though, is it's playback only. You can't track on it. But, you know, if you're doing anything post, or if you're working, you know, you're mixing.
Soft synths and stuff.
Yeah, I mean.
If you're doing a video playback for somebody.
I did an animation project, was editing the sound effects on the Metro, and it was really, I think on this product, DigiDesign really did a great job.
Yeah.
There's a few things that could be better. I think the USB key is a little, it's actually not small enough. They should have tapered it because it covers both USB ports on the side of my MacBook Pro.
But they do. It does
come with an extension, though.
Oh, okay.
So that's not that big of a deal. It's not that big of a problem. The output, plenty of volume, and sounds good.
It is amazing. I mean, the text, each character text is about a billionth of an inch tall.
Yeah, well, on this one.
It's like 2 pixels.
Has it got a video output like you connected to a monitor? Could you not?
No, I mean, basically,
it's meant to be what it is.
I'm running Pro Tools on a really tiny computer, but just the fact that it's a flash-based computer and that you can do and edit. It's amazing that you can get Pro Tools now and a little hardware dongle, basically. And you're paying, you know, I got it for $239 and it lists for like $279 and, you know, just talk the guy down a little bit, and he hit the price and picked it up. The bummer is there's no upgrade that I know of from the other M-Box, so you're essentially having to rebuy Pro Tools. And,
yeah, but it's so pretty cheap for what it does.
Yeah. But I just wanted to show you guys that because it's pretty phenomenal.
It is. It has the same syndrome, though, unfortunately, as telephones do. I found like cell phones, they were massive at first, and they got smaller and smaller and smaller, and then they eventually got like 2 inches long, but our faces haven't really shrunk. You see people going around going,
you got big old thumbs.
Yeah, it's like can't press the button. Something going, I bought an LG with big old buttons. It's like an old-fashioned flip, but it works.
Do you remember
better.
The calculator watch?
Yeah.
There was so much where you couldn't.
Yeah, in the end, you couldn't.
Yeah, and you were like, just like, I can't run it.
The data bank. That's what I used to have. The data bank 256.
Wow.
A nanopixel.
Wow. Such a geek.
I was going to say, wow.
That's when you had the mullet, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know I did.
Yeah. All right, well, anyhow, just getting back. So, yeah, if you get a chance, you want to get into Pro Tools, you want a great gift, and we'll talk about gifts a little bit later since this is our Christmas show, end-of-the-year show.
Hanukkah, too.
Hanukkah.
Every Kwanzaa. Whatever whatever you celebrate,
you know,
especially festive.
Then I highly recommend the M-Box Micro. And it's actually really good if you're a working musician, because like I said, you can't track with it. So you're basically going to be mixing pre-existing OMFs or pre-existing, sessions. Anyhow, moving on. One thing I wanted to bring up is we had a listener from Germany. His name is Marius, and he was listening to our podcast number 38, which was a few podcasts ago.
Oh, I remember that.
And he wanted some information on some really good alternatives to Neumann microphones. Anybody got anything, you know, can you remember what we were talking about? I remember we talked a little bit about the MXLs.
Yeah, MXL 5050 is similar to an 87.
An 87?
We AB'd the two, and they're very similar. And if you find that you need to trash an 87 for whatever reason, like on drums or things that might destroy it, the 5050 is about $50.
Wow.
And
you can shoot it.
It was actually close enough to be scary.
Wow.
Wow, that's amazing, really.
It was, yeah. And we used it for Foley and gun shoots, and we, because why take a $2,000 microphone and risk the dirt and the mishandling of it? And we A-B'd it, and it was close.
Couple, that's amazing.
Couple, you know, things were a little different, but not much.
Basically, cheaper, much cheaper alternative.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, what sort of price range are we talking about, do you think?
You know what?
Because, I mean, for $1,000, there are a bunch of things that are really good.
Remember that? What did we listen to?
Well, the Mojaves.
That was excellent.
Yeah. Amazing.
Amazing.
The M200 is a large diaphragm tube condenser that can take tons of level and sounds amazing. There's also a company, I'm going to get this wrong. It's a new company out of Latvia, I think, and it's JC Mics or JZ Mics. I don't remember. I think it's JZ, and they're going to be showing it NAMM.
Wow.
And they've built what they're saying is supposed to be like, with an 87, a really good condenser utility mic. And it's, again, about $1,000, and it sounds great.
Yeah.
It sounds really, really good. But that's still $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for $1,000, well, you probably get them for about $899, I think. You can always get a TLM, a Neumann 103. Those are great mics, too. I mean, those are...
Yeah, so if you want to go cheaper than that, I don't know.
Well, if you're talking cheaper, yeah, SE.
SE's a little step ahead of...
Play school?
No, you know, MXL's at one level. SE seems to be at the next level, at least price-wise.
If you're going to use a cheap microphone, like an MXL or some of the other brands that are really inexpensive... you got to listen to a couple of them, because there's a lot of inconsistencies between those microphones. That's the only negative that I found out about them. Some of them sound really great, and some of them sound just dog awful.
Yeah, and I think we covered in a previous podcast that a lot of times it's worth just waiting and not buying a mic until you can afford something a little bit better.
Yeah.
That's not the piece of gear you want to really skimp.
That's true.
I tell you, I will answer. If Rode make a pretty decent, it's nowhere comparable to a Neumann Sonics, but it's a great little utilitarian microphone if you're on a really low budget, and it's just one step above, you know, the very, very, you know, for about $200, you can get a decent.
And also, don't forget about the Shure SM57 and 58.
Oh, absolutely.
They
doesn't
sound
have to be a condenser
great
mic.
On
absolutely.
A lot of things.
Absolutely.
For dynamics. They're great.
Absolutely.
Yeah, dynamic microphones in
and
general.
If we're talking also with dynamics, Heil, H-E-I-L microphones,
yeah,
they've
they're
got
great.
Three models of new microphones that are amazing. The PR30 is one of the most useful mics I've gotten in years.
For what?
I've used it on all
gun
kinds
shots.
Of stuff, but it's amazing on loud guitars. Amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, I have to second what you're saying, because if you're using like RE20s or 57s or 58s.
Or 421s or.
Any of those really? Things, if you use, try the Heils, because they are really,
and
really amazing.
Super
and they're
super cheap.
They're super cheap.
The PR30 is under 200, I think. It may list for over, but
yeah.
It's.
That's
great.
Amazing. Under $100?
Heil PR30?
Under 200. Heil PR30.
But they have the 20, the 30, and the 40.
Yeah.
And they're all different. And they have a few others as well. But they're great, great cheap mics.
I'm going to get it. That sounds like something.
Check it out.
I'm still waiting to buy the Mojaves. I still haven't. I'm like, we did a test. I said, I'm going to buy one of these tomorrow. And I never did.
And the day after the test, I bought a pair.
And he did.
Well, that's because.
He's a recorder and I'm not.
Well, that and the fact that, you know.
I'm cheap.
Then you just call him up. Hey, Andrew, you know those microphones you got?
Hey, and if your listener in Germany is interested, my brother's name is Mike.
Oh.
So if, you know, he's looking for a mic.
He's cheap.
He's probably cheap. Very all cheap. Right. Yes.
What's he sound like?
Let's call him and find out. I have no idea.
We're going to move on. The next thing I wanted to bring up was actually, Ken, who's our engineer, actually heard a rumor, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about it on the air to see how it would affect us. But Ken, why don't you get up here to the microphone and just tell us this rumor.
A little birdie told me that individual commission-based sales at Guitar Center is done as of the 1st. So they're kind of doing a Best Buy model. Everybody kind of works for the greater good of the store, and they share in a pool, and they're just going to get whatever their $8 an hour, whatever that is.
Now, my question is, do you think
that's crazy?
Yeah, do you think that's going to be a first of all, whether it's true or not true? The reason why I want to talk about it is, do you think that's going to benefit the consumer, or is it, you know, the person who's going to go buy gear there, or is it going to be?
It's going to benefit the consumer price.
Yeah, going to Guitar Center, wheeling and dealing.
But aren't most people at Guitar Center? I mean, I hate to say it. I worked for Guitar Center for about 6 months, and when I was there, everyone went there to get good deals on gear. They worked there for a little bit, and then they bought their gear and left.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think the turnover, I heard somewhere the turnover is less than 180 days on average or something crazy like that. It's somewhere between 3 and 6 months, but I think it's under 3 months.
Well, the thing is, though, is I don't know if they could – I mean, they may go to a non-commission-based sales, but I don't think they'll ever – stop wheeling and dealing because there's other retailers that will wheel and deal.
Well,
and
doesn't
not
it make
locked
it,
in.
Doesn't, isn't that better for the wheeling and dealing because they don't, they're not so invested in what the price is for their commission?
But Guitar Center has so many stores.
The individual told me that what you see is like going into any store, the price
right.
you see.
That's what I heard, the same story.
Well, see, I mean, I actually would much prefer that. I don't enjoy haggling. I don't enjoy being shown the list price, and then if you don't ask, you're being taken advantage of. I mean,
I
that's
agree.
Insane.
Yeah.
Yes, but no, because you know the list price is, you know the price that they're going to set is going to be more expensive than what you could deal
but it,
with.
No, but it won't be because it'll be the same price that you could get it from Sweetwater. Otherwise, no one will ever buy anything at Guitar Center again.
Yep.
So, I mean, it'll be the price you usually get them to haggle down to anyway.
I mean, can you imagine going to Sears or Best Buy and having to haggle for a TV?
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. But at the same time, I think Guitar Center put a lot of mom and pop shops out of business, and they put a lot of they're like the Walmart of the music industry.
Yeah.
And there's some, you know, I shop at Guitar Center, so I you know, I'm not going to bash them because they service me. I can always go to a store. There's plenty of stores around, and you can always pick up what you generally need. And if you need anything that you can't find there, then there's other places to get it. But I just think I don't see how they'll be able to keep up with, hey, this is a price that you got, and take it or leave it. I don't see how that's going to work. But I don't know.
If it's lower than everybody else's.
Yeah, but I don't understand. Why don't you see that working when it works in every single other retail?
Circuit City against Best Buy.
Because of the culture of buying.
I think you're
just
used to it.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. But that's it's the culture of being able to wheel and deal on musical gear.
I don't think people like
but
that.
But I know. I don't know anybody who enjoys going in there and haggling because you always you know what price they can sell it for. So if you don't get them all the way down, you've just lost money, but you'll never make money. You'll never get a better deal than they were prepared to give you when you walked in the store and when they took inventory of the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely
they have like strict percentages over their cost, and that's what they can sell it for. And if you don't haggle, they'll be glad to take even more of your money. And that's why. And I'm not going to bash them either because they do what they do.
Right.
I refuse to go there because I won't do that. I just can't stand the thought of there's something which has a price, and the price is from the manufacturers. It's modeled exactly the same as every other industry. It's not like you don't tell the manufacturer what you're going to pay for the thing until you find out what you sold it for.
Right.
There's a manufacturer's cost to the store to get their inventory, and every other store on the planet that sells other kinds of stuff, well, not on the planet, but in the U.S., sets a price. That's a markup off of what they pay, and that's what you pay, and that's what I like about going to buy things. I don't have time. Like, if you
it's
need,
true.
Let's say you're in the middle of a session,
right.
You need a mic cable, you
right.
don't have time to haggle.
Right. And
you'll
you
go
don't.
In there and pay five times the price.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. You
and that's
go
not
there.
Good.
No, I definitely
but
can
isn't
agree.
It, but isn't for that reason, isn't it? They count on people not haggling, and so it's going to be bad for their bottom line.
I don't know, though.
To have to.
Well, no, but they have to buy
I think they're buying it
cheaper than everybody else.
Well, that's true, but I think the people are becoming more haggling aware these days, and because this economy, certainly the U.S. economy is heading into a recession, at least a pullback in thing, people are going to be more frugal in their spending. So I think it's actually kind of smart in a way, because they'll be going, well, hang on a second, people are going to be low on the bucks. They're not going to be wanting to, you know, they're going to haggle more. So they want to go for the lower price. Let's just offer it to them, and they know they will have nowhere else to go because we will offer the lowest price. So they won't go to the Sweetwaters or the other places.
And,
more.
And like Scott just said, though, which was a really good point, is they get it cheaper than anyone else.
That's
because
right.
of the volume. So they will make more money than other places realize. At the same price.
Well, here's the thing, though. You know, they're only going to be able to price their goods at the manufacturer's maximum advertised price. So essentially, they're going to be you're going to be getting 15% off. That's the only thing they can price it at and advertise it at. So generally, you know, you're going to go in there and you're going to find that the price is going to be, let's just say, 15% off if that's what the manufacturer has it as their price, as their map. Knowing that, you know, I'm not saying I go in there and try to just totally pillage them to the last ounce and I want the guy crying, but yet at the same time, it's...
Yeah, you do.
No, because, you know, you can buy it cheaper if you go online or if you look for deals or whatever, but at the same time, I just like, especially on major purchases, which are, you know, the keyboards or the software or the Pro Tools, I like being able to know where that margin is and get it, you know, I pay for my gear just like everybody else, you know.
And well, I know. And that, it, so it always bugs me to think that I may have just paid more for absolutely no reason other than I'm either lazy or don't have time to haggle.
For both those. You are lazy.
I am lazy. I don't enjoy doing it.
It's not something you want to do.
I don't like.
I understand.
I just don't like being in a situation where I know that they're starting off by lying. At that point, I'm done.
Right.
Like, I don't want to buy it.
But it's not. You know what? It's not. I wouldn't say it's lying.
Yes, it is. How is it not lying to put the price tag on the thing? And they don't just say, hey, this is list price, make us an offer. They say, this is the price.
Right.
Right.
And it's like 45% higher than everything else.
But no, but maybe the price. It may actually be the price. That's what the manufacturer says the price is.
No, they always put the list price.
Exactly.
But that's not retail price.
Not retail price.
It's not what anyone would ever price.
Well, no, it's exactly. It's not street price.
You know what else? One other thing. There's one of the few reasons that it's valid to pay more for something is if you get service.
Well, absolutely.
But the problem is at Guitar Center, don't try to make any relationships there because the next time you come in the store, the guy who sold you the stuff isn't going to be there.
Well,
the turnaround is
in LA, this
I will say the exception to that is GC Pro, which is the pro division that Guitar Center set up, and they understand, you know, the workflow of successful professional people who need to be able to get work done, and they understand that. But if you just walk in off the floor, which most people do, just walk onto the floor at Guitar Center and expect to get a deal, you're going to be paying a price, unless you haggle your brains out, you're going to be paying a price that would be valid if you were going to be getting great service. But most of the time, you're getting sort of surly,
service.
And the good instance is, like, when you look at Best Buy with Magnolia or the Geek Squad and Circuit City's got Fire Dog, these are all service support at these places. If you want to just buy a box and you can barely understand the guy because he can't speak English, in L.A., you go to Fry's. And they suppose you have the best prices. You go buy your box, you put the money down, and that's it. GC is going to be the same thing. If you're going to want to know how to use it, that may not be the place to go. Maybe, maybe not. They're going to be selling boxes. You put your credit card down, you walk out with a box.
Hey, let me ask you, Dave, where do you buy gear?
I was thinking about that when you guys were talking. You know, I only buy limited things at Guitar Center that I need kind of last minute. And I was just thinking, one of the guys was talking about buying the wire that holds the snares. And I went in there, and it took me 10 minutes to explain to him what I need. I had to get a snare and show him because they had no clue what we were talking about. And they took one off of a snare to sell me.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they had to open a pro division because people would refuse to deal with them. That's not so good to me. And
it's
then you just have this upper echelon that the guy walking in off the street can't even talk to. I think that it's a good thing. I think they need to compete with other retail outlets as a retail outlet.
Well, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
we'll see.
And maybe it's not even true.
But you know, I've heard it twice now.
You talked about the mom and pops, though, and I think that as you either want it, we discussed in this podcast since the beginning. We said, oh, you know, this is something you like, try it out, check it out, have someone show it to you. A lot of these places don't do that. You come in. I mean, you go to GC, there's about 30 guitar players playing Marshalls really loud. You can't even think. And it's crazy in there. Yeah. Meanwhile, if there's a mom-and-pop store, whether it's a guitar or drums, you want to be off on your own, you want to try something, play with it, spend 4 or 5 hours figuring out what you want to buy, whether it's cymbals and snares, guitars, acoustics. The service, you pay a little bit more for it, but you get a little something for it.
I think that's the way, one thing, I think the whole world has become service-less with calling, I mean, respectfully, outsourcing. We get India on the phone, yeah. You know, and hard to get communication when you've got a technical problem. Earthlink is terrible for it,
yeah.
and Dell, and they're all crap. And I think eventually it's going to turn around and people are going to say, hang on, we're going to actually supply a service now where there's a mum and pop or somebody can actually, you know, respectfully speak English or maybe is even in the US and actually be knowledgeable about what they're selling. And you will pay, end up wanting to pay a premium for that.
Yeah.
I'd happily pay 10%.
And it's just a little bit more, not a lot, too.
Yeah.
Dave, if you don't buy at GC, where do you buy stuff?
He steals things drummers do.
You got to watch out for us. If I need something a little more high-tech, like I need cymbals, a snare, I go to a little bit more mom-and-pop. I go to West LA Music. I bought cymbals last time. I bought a snare a couple of years ago, a specialized kind of snare. I went to West Coast Drum in Costa Mesa.
Yeah.
So if I need sticks kind of last minute, snare, strainer, I actually ordered heads from the people I get heads from and didn't get them when I needed them. So I went into GC to get a head, and they didn't have the one I wanted. And I normally go in there and have to explain to them what I need. So I think one of the problems with GC is their training. You usually find younger guys that work there, you know, younger musicians, they really don't know who the real pros are.
Oh, that's true.
They're kind of lack of experience. Yeah. You know, nice kids,
yeah,
but they really don't know what you're talking about. And
I totally agree with you. There's definitely a lack of, I guess, not respect, but they definitely don't know how to identify their customer. They don't know
right.
who the pros are, exactly like you're saying. And they're
not salespeople. They're just people go, yeah, I play guitar, I play drums. If I play drums, I'm in the drum center. Hey, it's cool.
Yeah, and the turnaround is so fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can't expect to have ace salespeople.
That's true.
The way they come and go.
But I tell you what, though, if you know what you want, and you know what price you want to pay, you can't beat going in there and there he goes. Andrew's
no,
about ready
you,
to throw
well,
something at
it'll
me.
It'll take you
too
twice
long.
As long
I
to
agree.
Get out because you have to haggle. You can't just walk in, buy something, and leave.
Right.
You can't.
No, you can't
no,
because
true.
You got to get your price down.
No, yeah. Listen.
How long does that take?
Okay, here we go. When
all
I
right.
went to get the M-Box Micro, okay? Yeah. Picked up the phone. I'm on the train.
GC Pro or GC?
No, just regular GC. It was down in Orange County. I called them up. I said, hey, do you have the M-Box Micro in? Let me check. Yes, we have it in. Okay, great. What's it going for? He said, oh, the list is like $279 or something like that. Okay, great. And I walked in there and I said, yes, you have the M-Box Micro? He goes, yeah. And he handed me the box and I took a look at it and fell in love with it. It was like love at first sight. Too much information. but it was really cool. And I got up and I said, great. Hey, what's the best price you can give me on this? And the guy went, how about this? And I said, sure, I'll take it. And yeah.
So you paid 20%.
How about
much.
This?
Okay. So you didn't haggle. You just gave you the price that he
yeah.
could give you.
He gave me the price.
And you said, okay.
And it was below list. And I knew I was,
what's
I knew
below
okay,
list.
No, no. So, and I knew what the street price was. And so I was a little educated and I got it below the street price. You know, they're going for $249. I got it for $239. And I like just being able to do that kind of stuff. I'm not going to sit there. If you would have went $249, I'm not going to go $247.50, you know, and that's
so. You think it would be a bad thing though if they just priced the thing at $239? Everybody in town would go there instead of calling around because their price would actually be advertised lower.
Do you remember a while back when
they're not going to price it? They're going to put it at if it's $279, they're going to put it at $269.
Well, then why'd you get it for $239 without having to?
So what I disagree with you is they can put it at $239. Because let's say West LA bought it for $100, they probably bought it for $75. So in other words, because they buy so much quantity, they can go at the exact same price as anybody in town and make more money.
They should end up with more business because they could price stuff lower if they need to. Agree to disagree.
Well, no, if that's true, you should be able to go in there and buy the cheapest expendables any place in town. And it's not true. You can't buy the cheapest expendables. because they have the buying power. Why can't you buy, you know, drumsticks cheaper there than anyplace else? You can't.
Because their margins are higher. Yeah. Well,
why can't you buy Pro Tools a lot cheaper than you really should? Because they don't have to.
You're willing
to pay for it.
No matter what the price is, I don't like loud stores full of surly, clueless people.
I understand.
And I'm not saying that part.
I'm not saying that's every Guitar Center, because I've had some good experiences, too. I've shopped at Guitar Center for, 20-plus years.
Yeah.
But so much now, unless you have a salesman or a relationship, when you go in there, you're just greeted with just noise and cluelessness. Yeah. And the whole fries mentality of let's just go read the box, anytime you ask a question – that's just not acceptable.
Yeah, and if I want noise and cluelessness, I'll stay home.
All right. Well, on that note,
studio.
We've talked about this way too much.
Yeah, you can cut that down.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, wow, we have a lot of things we got to get to that I just don't know if we're going to be able to. But we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And during the break, me and Andrew basically went out to the parking lot and
we scrapped.
And I started to cry, so he stopped, mainly because he was laughing so hard. Okay, man.
But Mike does agree now.
It's going to be, yeah, I agree. Yeah. Andrew, I agree, okay?
All right, whatever, man.
That's cool, man.
Hey, I wanted to bring Dave on because Dave actually has a really, really great story. He's a drummer for a band. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story about Potato Salad and how it got started and playing drums and where you are in your whole career as a musician.
Sure. Yeah, I started playing drums when I was about 13 years old, just turned 47, so I've been playing for a long time. And always played as a side thing, had a kind of a day job or a real job, as people would say. And, get married, have kids, and, I didn't want to go out on the road. I didn't want to play bars. So I just kind of stuck with my day job and playing gigs at night. And through the years, been able to do sessions and play live and take tours here and there just a week or two at a time. But when I turned 40, some friends and I hooked up and decided we wanted to jam at a local coffee house. And we didn't want to play covers. We didn't want to play just jam, everybody start playing in C, So we selected a couple bands that we thought, if we pick these bands' music, it'll really stretch us. So it was Los Lobotomies and Charisma, both L.A.-based studio musician bands, Steve Lukather, David Garfield, Jeff Porcaro, Carlos Vega, those kind of guys. So these songs, scare you to death for any musician, except for those guys in those bands. So we started showing up at this coffee house on Tuesday nights, just no rehearsal. You know the song, listen to it, show up, start playing it. And after a few weeks, started getting a gathering of people that would come every Tuesday and just kind of check us out, just as a trio, bass, drum, guitars. And about 3-4 weeks in, we decided, we're kind of getting sick of just a trio because every time a guitarist solos, it's just the bass and drums trying to carry it. Let's invite a keyboard player. And one of the guys says, well, let's invite David Garfield. He wrote all these songs. Well, what's it hurt? Let's just see what he says. And none of us knew him. We'd all kind of seen him play gigs in L.A. at Baked Potato and such, and seen him at the NAMM show and had all his records. And so I found his website, shot him an email, and explained, hey, we're just three knuckleheads. We all have day jobs. We're all over 40. We're not trying to ride your coattails, but we'd love for you to come gig with us, play your songs in our style, and we'll pay you. It's just a little coffee house. There might be three people. We don't know, but we'll buy you some coffee, And I got an email back within a couple hours from David, and he said, love to come out. I don't want to throw a big fee at you because it'll scare you away. What could you guys offer? So I got a hold of the other guys, and we all decided we'd throw in $100 a piece. And we did, and offered it to him, and he says, I'll be there. When do you want me? So we gave him the next Tuesday, and then
that's
we all
cool.
Started freaking out after that because here's our hero that's going to come play with us. So the following Tuesday night, he shows up, and no rehearsal, came in, and there must have been about 80 to 100 people at this little coffee house, and David came in and we just kicked butt. It was the greatest night. We had such a blast. And he asked us when we got done if we would record a record on his record label. And we would have to do some of the funding because he's not made of money, which we agreed to do.
But he had $300 at that point.
And a cup of coffee from the coffee clatch. So what he asked us is, do you have any originals, which we had a couple originals we'd come up with, and did we have new arrangements of his tunes, which we did. And he really liked that, and so we put a little different spin on kind of Charisma and Los Lobotomies. And so, you know, fast forward, it took about 6-8 months to get it together, and then some really cool things happened. A company who's a subsidiary of Sony, a little Japanese company, was recording bands at the Baked Potato, and they were testing recording gear and software and microphones, and they asked, hey, can we record you? You're going to play there and you want to do a live record. We'll record you for free if you allow us to test, you know, our software and such. And we said, great idea. So we bought a hard drive, gave it to them. They used our hard drive. The funny thing for you guys, since you're all audio guys, is they told me that they had a special mic for the snare. They called it Special, and it's on the liner notes. It's an SM57. Okay, very special. And to be so special, they put it about 1.5 feet from the snare drum. So
nice.
Very special placement. But that night was magical for us. We had Lenny Castro on percussion, David Garfield on keys, Larry Klimas on sax and flute. The four of us in the band, we had added a guitarist in between that time and the gig, and recorded the record live. Magical night, had a blast. So fast forward after that, about 2 weeks later, Garfield hires a professional, and I'm using quotation marks, to dump it from the hard drive from Digital Performer to Pro Tools so we can mix. So the engineer he hired a guy who's a software professional. He comes over. He sets them up with the computers. He's got all the drives. He's ready to go. The guy tells Garfield he loves Garfield's music. Garfield gives him some CDs. I'll be back in a couple hours to see how you're doing. So Garfield leaves. He comes back in a couple hours. The CDs that he gave this guy are still on the table. The guy's gone, and he erased the second set and could not be found. So now Garfield doesn't want to call us. I mean, we put our heart and our lives into this gig. You know, it was a great night, and he can't find the second set.
Just gone.
It's gone. So he hired a company in L.A. to seek out the second set somewhere on the drive, and they couldn't find it. So that was like, I think he spent about $800 on that.
Wow, that's like more than erase. That's like erased and destroyed.
Yeah, and so it's gone. So we had six tunes we could deal with, and we decided we wanted some more. So the engineer that hired the software guy actually let us go in the studio and record live three more tunes, and that's the nine you have on the CD. So
wow.
And you haven't the name of the guy that wiped the hard drive readily available.
You know what's weird is I heard later on, I heard that a friend of our band heard about our story and was afraid about had she backed up her drives properly. So she hired a guy, another professional, to come to her house and dump things from Digital Performer to Pro Tools. Same thing we did, right? But she wanted to do it right because she heard our story. So this guy shows up, starts working, and she says, yeah, I'm doing this because my friends are in this band and they had their second set. And he stopped what he was doing and looked back up there and he said, oh, that's my friend. And I know exactly what he did. That's famous in our industry now for these guys. It's like called the Garfield incident, you know. So.
Wow. But you know, the happy ending is you do have that CD, the potato salad CD, and it's a great CD. Where can you get the CD at?
Well, a couple places. CDBaby.com
right.
Is probably the easiest place to find it. You can PayPal or right. a credit card. And we have a website, potatosaladmusic.com, and there's links to buy it there.
Great. Well, see, one thing that I really like about this story is the fact is you still have your day job, correct? I mean,
still have my day job.
Yeah,
yes.
And I just there's a lot of guys that deal with audio, and we're pretty fortunate in the fact that we do audio full time. But you know, I think it's just really encouraging that you can start in your 40s, basically a band. You start jamming. Next thing you know, it you're putting out this basically a cult CD now that's kind of getting popular because of, you know, the story around it. And I just wanted to ask you guys two things. Number one,
join a band. Should we start a band?
A band, man.
No, but it's just a shame that once you listen to the CD, that Dave should be touring with this thing because it's such a great CD. It's jazz fusion and things like that. And where do you think live music is? What do you guys think the state of live music is in our society nowadays?
It's in your iPod.
I mean, you think there's going to be more opportunities for people to go out there and to perform and to do live music? Do you think?
I think live more so than recording. I mean, I think live people can't rip off live performance. I mean, they can't rip off the band. They can rip off their recordings, and maybe they're going to rip off their recordings and get to like the band so much that they'll go and see them, and the band will make money on the live side of it more than.
So, do you think that it's actually you see
I hope so.
I mean, I hope so. I'm with you.
I think
you.
So too. I think people are like starved. I saw a great bumper sticker yesterday, and it said, "Drum machines have no soul." It's a pretty cool drum.
I have that sticker.
Have you got
it? Great, yeah, it's great.
Maybe I saw you. You
it might have been me.
On Woodman Avenue, I think.
I don't know.
In a black car, a little. I remember, anyway.
Cutting you off.
My brother Mike.
Yeah, but I mean, Rob, I mean, where do you think the state of live music is? Do you think it's?
Well, I think live music is one of the ways that people are still willing to spend money for music. You know, the mentality with singles, people kind of expect to be able to get singles for next to nothing because they know they're available on, you know, file sharing websites and things like that. But there's no way to replace a live concert experience with anything that can be copied. I think right now, basically, ringtones and live concerts are two things that especially young audiences are still willing to pay for. People don't expect to get a great concert for free. People are still used to the idea of paying. So.
And they're paying a lot now. I mean, the prices have gone up like crazy.
And that's a really good thing because if people are getting the music for free or for really cheap, if that inspires them to want to go see the show live, then the band is doing fine.
I mean, would you ever, because you're a great musician, would you ever want to jam, go live, do something?
I'm too good. You know, I toured for so many years, and that was kind of against my will because I'm not a big traveler. I'm perfectly happy to stay back in the studio. I like trying to create a live environment in the studio and capture some magic because when you're live, that's when the magic does happen. Right. And if something's too canned in the studio, I don't like that kind of sound. I like to try to create that magic moment, but I'm very happy to stay home and do it.
Andrew, what do you think about the state of live music? How does that – does it even play into any of the stuff that you're doing now?
Would
you
ever want to absolutely. I mean, for any band, the only way to make money is just to play gigs. And I think that you get a bit of a skewed attitude towards it in L.A. because so many bands still – as soon as they've got one song that 12 people like, they assume they can get some kind of record deal and they get excited about that and they're not really building it up the way you do in a smaller market or in the middle of nowhere,
right,
where every college kid's like, hey, man, what band's playing? Oh, great, let's go see that. There's still a lot of smaller clubs outside of L.A., I think, where that's going on. There are more festivals now than there have ever been. I think in the U.K. now, there are at least two festivals every single weekend for 3 months in the summer.
Wow.
And there are 20 bands playing every day at least at each of these festivals. So I think there's still a big market for it. It's weirder. I mean, it's changing because just like with people not going to movies as much just because there's more things to do, people aren't necessarily going to see live music because they would maybe stay home and play video games online or do other things. But especially for rock bands and for jazz and that genre, there's nothing that replaces a live thing. There's a lot of it. There's a jazz club right down the street from my house, Charlie O's, 7 days a week, and it's packed. It's packed, so it's still there, and I don't think it's going anywhere.
Scott, what about you? You live music. Do you go to concerts?
I like two kinds of live performances. I like the giant, blown-out show with lights and technology, and it's as much about the show as it is about the music. And then I really love the coffee house music where you get really great players just doing their thing, and you capture that moment. I mean, there's nothing like it. I mean, it's great. So, yeah, I think that live performance, you know, especially now that, you know, with the strike happening on TV, so I can date this, You know, do you want to watch the reruns of whatever you've been watching, crappy show? And so a lot of times it's going out to the Starbucks or the Coffee Bean or the blah blah, and then just catching, just being entertained.
Right.
And I think it's really kind of cool.
Well, I do know, you know, if you follow the trend in live music for, let's say, the past 12 years or so, even farther back than that, let's go 15 years ago, you know, 15 years ago, they didn't have the whole House of Blues circuit for bands. And I think once the House of Blues opened and then you could play another House of Blues and it's that level of theater, you know, where now they've created, you know, there's the circuit. Now you either play big, or you play the House of Blues circuit. You don't see too many, you know, arena shows anymore. You don't see too many, even like Universal Amphitheater shows. There's still some of them, but not like there used to be where, you know, every weekend.
Well, and part of that though, I think, is that they've started to price themselves out of their own market.
Right.
I mean, ticket prices have gone.
The scalpers too. I mean,
crazy. Yeah. I mean, not necessarily because they said it, but right. The scalpers too. And there's enough interest that those shows will still sort of kind of sell out, but then there are some tours where they can't sell tickets.
Right.
And they actually have to cancel shows now, and that's starting to happen. But I think part of that is the price, because I don't remember ever paying more than $25 to go see anybody.
But even when it's hundreds of dollars, it's just crazy.
Now, if you want to book a ticket for Celine Dion, you're paying a year in advance, and it's $150
to $500. Yeah, I'd pay $500 not to see her.
Yeah.
but that's what's so good about that House of Blues circuit is, you know, bands can make money, and people, they're approachable in their prices, you know, and it's actually, you know, it's a much better venue to see some
of
these bands.
But just like, I mean, the same with the recorded music industry, it becomes fractured. There are many, many, many more bands. So on that scale, if you need a couple hundred people and that's a successful gig, you can do that in many places all around the country with a minimum of exposure. You get big on YouTube for a minute.
Right.
I mean, look, OK Go.
Yeah.
That's almost a YouTube band in a way, and they can sell hundreds of seats pretty much anywhere in the country.
Yes, I saw them over at House of Blues, and they put on a great show. It was a great show. They did a great job. So.
But to go from there to stadiums, there are only so many acts that are going to fill larger venues because it's so expensive to do now.
Well, a lot of times that's also why they'll put a bunch of different bands on a ticket to be able to justify a more expensive ticket.
A lot
ticket.
Of co-headlining tours or these roving festivals like the, you know, I think of a name, but I can't at the moment.
Palooza.
The Warp Tour or Lollapalooza used to tour, but they don't even do that anymore. They just do it in Chicago.
The thing about the big giant concerts is the sound is just so bad.
We used to play Budweiser Superfests and like, it was just the worst.
You know something, though, but not all the big bands sound good. There's some good sounding. I saw Pete Gabriel sounded brilliant.
Live?
Yeah.
Big show. I believe it.
Just the guys they just blast the room and they try and kill the room.
Yeah. Well, I just want to encourage guys that are out there that, you know, it's not too late and you can, if you really, you know, you want to do something, now's a really.
Directed to us, you're kind of looking at us when you say that.
Well, also, you know what? If you're a new artist, whatever genre you're in, you should think about what your thing is like live.
Yeah, absolutely.
There aren't too many projects that they can and should live only in the studio. You may figure it out in the studio. You may write it in the studio. You may, you know, get all your ideas down in the studio or whatever. But unless you can get out there live, as far as touching the audience, that's an important thing. But also as far as making money. Because remember, while you're working on your single, you're working on the one thing that everybody's expecting to get for free. So you got to figure out if you want to be able to make a living doing it.
Now download the song for 99 cents and pay $2.99 for your ringtone.
Yeah.
No matter how much you think you're not an act that should play live, one of the biggest or most hyped tours in the last 7 years or whatever was Kraftwerk. And if there was ever a project that should not play live, it's Kraftwerk. Four dudes with laptops, and they were sold out everywhere.
And they were the grandfather of technology. Yeah.
Think of gorillas, you know, hiding behind animated characters. Yeah. And that's a great, great, great performance.
Yeah, I just think it's a great time to be a musician and practice and get out there. Dave, what's the future hold for Potato Salad and for you?
Well, the thing that Garfield loved the most about us that intrigued him was that we were a band, and he's used to playing with Sidemen and some of the best players in the world. I've met some of the best players in the world now through this project. They become friends of mine, and what they like the most about our band is that we're a band. So we get together, we play, we arrange the tunes, we play on emotion. It's honestly played music. It's not twisted by Pro Tools. And we have a blast doing it. And we take songs. Some songs have been written, you know, 20 years ago, and we put a new loop to them, a new arrangement to them, and gives them new life. And so, you know, friends of mine now, Greg Bissonette, Luis Conte, Jimmy Johnson, these guys come up to us and say, man, the Potato Salad record, I love it. I play it over and over and over. I can't get enough of it. And I think that's because of the emotion we had in it.
Right.
Where a lot of today's music, it's unlike the music of the 80s, the good bands of the 80s, you know, late 70s, early 80s, where it's two-inch tape and you're just playing. And, you know, there's some fix-its in there. Sure, you're punching in, but you got to play your instrument. And today, you really don't know what they played. I mean, you guys are musicians, you know. You know, Pro Tools can fix many, many ills. So I think that's the cool thing about being in a band.
Right.
And so many sidemen today, they just get calls to do sessions for whoever, and you don't know who's going to be there. And even
and
live
gigs
today.
They don't interact either. It's always like they're always playing to a click or to something else.
Exactly. And then your live gigs, you get charts thrown in front of you, and there's downbeat at 9 o'clock, and that's it. You know, you're not sure who you're playing with tonight.
Right.
And a band is a really cool thing. It's fun. Yeah.
So everybody go out there and form a band. Well, hey, listen. This is our Christmas show, our Kwanzaa show, our Hanukkah show, our end of the year show. and last year we did gift suggestions, and this year we're going to do something a little different. We've been talking about this.
We can spin the dreidel, see if we get a Pro Tools or a Nowendo
or a bottle.
No, what we're going to do is we're going to put out an iMix for iTunes, and I asked everybody to contribute a couple songs so that we can put it on the iMix. And these are songs that for each one of us, maybe they're a favorite song or something we worked on or something that has a cool reverb or we just like the snare sound. You know, anything. But I want to go through and I want to ask everybody if you can, you know, give me a song or two that you want to contribute to the iMix. We're going to start with Martin because he's not here and he's at home with his sick cat, and we want to send all the good vibes out to the cat because Martin really loves his cats and they're really cool. So Martin's songs, well, unfortunately, out of the three, only two of them we'll be able to find on iTunes. Fallen Angel by Robbie Robertson. Great, great track.
Excellent track.
Great track. In the House of Stone and Light by Martin Page. Great track. Excellent track. And then the other one is Hey Jude by the Beatles, which would be a great track to put on this, but the Beatles aren't up on iTunes.
Oh, it's cut me out there because I've got a Beatles track on there.
Yeah, well,
that's okay.
Me too, but there you go.
But so those are Martin songs. So Andrew, what are the songs and
why?
Well,
okay, so I had a Beatles song, which I'm going to mention anyway because Tomorrow Never Knows, which is the song that made me start thinking about recording because that was definitely a studio concoction. And it was amazing to me, all done with tape loops, lots of crazy effects on things and whatever. But okay, so then the three that will actually be on iTunes.
Great.
Bob Marley, Lively Up Yourself, because that is just an amazing track and it sounds amazing and great, great playing. Love the song. It's the first song on Natty Dread, worth getting the whole record. XTC, Snowman.
Yeah.
Just always love that song from English Settlement, the last track on that. And then there's this band that nobody's ever heard of from Norway called Motor Psycho. And not all of their albums are on iTunes, so there was a song I wanted to have called Nothing to Say, which isn't on there, so a song called In Our Tree by Motor Psycho. There you go. I didn't work on any of these.
And Rob wants anything by Rush.
Oh yeah, please.
All right. Well, let's go to Rob. Let's go, Rob. What are your three songs?
Well, I chose a few. A couple are kind of guilty pleasures.
That's totally fine.
Safety Dance, Muskrat Love.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with Safety Dance.
You're not standing up for Muskrat Love, though. My kids love Safety Dance.
Actually, you know what? One from back then, or even a little before, I was a huge Split Enz fan. And I think we talked about it on a previous podcast, but they had a song called One Step Ahead that was just a great song. I don't know if any of you know it, but that wasn't one officially on my list, but I'm going to add that since there are all these Beatles songs that aren't going to be able to be on there. Anyway, but One Step Ahead or
Chris,
One
Step
Ahead of you.
The Beatles for Split Enz is what you're
well,
saying.
Well, no, but if the Beatles were available, we'd all be picking Beatles.
Well, that's true.
But I'd have to say also, I wanted to pick one from Earth, Wind & Fire because they have
Fantasy.
so many, and I chose Fantasy, yeah.
Yeah.
Just because, how can you not? Also, one of the happiest songs ever, Barry White's song, You're the First, My Last, My Everything.
That's great.
I love that song.
Yeah.
It's just so happy.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, it's amazing. That song is just absolutely great. And then a song that I actually did work on from Stevie's last album, there's a ballad called Can't Imagine Love Without You that I don't think that album didn't get the promotion it deserved, but that song, Can't Imagine Love Without You, is an absolutely unbelievable ballad with real orchestra, and Stevie sings his butt off, and it's just, I think it's incredible. And I judge Stevie's songs by which ones I get sick of at which point after having heard them a billion times. And that song, I know already I'll never get sick of it. It's incredible. And there's plenty of old Stevie stuff too, but I wanted to pick one that most people hadn't heard of. So I'd pick Can't Imagine Love Without You from A Time to Love.
Great. Scott.
This is all going to be Russian Journey here,
yeah,
right?
No, you know, it's I don't all have songs, but I have albums or bands, styles of music.
Well, we'll narrow it down you.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
All right.
Pink Floyd. I like The Wall.
From The Wall? All right, Comfortably Numb. You're going to pick a song?
Comfortably Numb.
I like Production Standard.
Look, look, Mummy, there's an aeroplane up in the sky.
Dum, dum. I like pretty much anything from Cirque du Soleil.
Actually, you know, I went to my first Cirque du Soleil show 4 days ago, and I have to say, it was absolutely incredible.
I mean, there's some stuff from Astaire and O that is really quite enchanting. It's a little bit different than what you're used to hearing. Okay.
I don't know if it's on iTunes. Might
I don't
be.
Know.
It's on,
we'll have to find out.
We'll check.
We'll check.
And I'm going to pick a film. The theme song from Glory by James Horner.
Yes, that's pretty incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah, with the Harlem Boys Choir.
All right, is that up there?
And Potato Salad.
Rock and roll, man.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to pick something like from the Hollywood Edge sound effects
CD.
I like Door Slam number 12.
Gunshots at dawn.
All right, Bobby.
I didn't realize the Beatles was not available like a loser, but so I had All You Need Is Love as a Beatles track because I thought it was a brilliant, simple song which says
there's
pretty much...
There's probably a really bad cover by somebody
There must probably is.
Is that the real,
I think it's a Rush version that we could miss... no, anyway, so I'm taking that out the loop and talking in big blocks like our dear friend here. The Rumours album, got to say, you know...
Oh, Fleetwood Mac?
Yeah, Fleetwood Mac. Yeah. That deserves a bit of respect, so I would say You Can Go Your Own Way. That's a great song.
Oh, that's great.
And then more of a something that I thought was like the top class and the best stage of recording and production. It was also an Earth, Wind & Fire track, I'll Go For The Ballad, After The Love Is Gone. It was great, musically a great song and a great production, a good all-round flavor there. And then to fill in my Beatles track, well, I don't know. Let me just think.
Talking Heads, Once in a Lifetime.
Let's go. Talking Heads.
Wow, so when the Beatles finally do make it to iTunes, we're going to have to redo this whole IMAX.
I think if my son were to do it, he likes Chili Peppers.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. You got a friend, Carole King, because I had the luxury of mixing her live record.
Oh, great.
That's it.
Ken. Ken's our engineer. Ken, why don't you
step up to the microphone?
Come up to the microphone and come tell us your songs.
I'm really into Feist right now, and I think from her album The Reminder, Feel It All. And I don't know, is Danny Elfman up?
I would think some of his stuff's on there. Yeah,
yeah.
The Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah.
The first one, Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Pee Wee's Big Adventure. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Amazing.
That's classic.
Third one, probably Zeppelin.
Which one?
They're on there now, right?
Yeah.
All their stuff's on.
Did they just get on?
Stairway.
Yeah. 10 years Gone. Cashmere.
Cashmere.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 7.5 minutes.
Brilliant.
Which they apparently played last night, not to date when we did the podcast, but yeah, and apparently it was ridiculous.
Great. And
what do you got?
Well, I'll go last, right. But we're going to ask
we need April.
April. April, come on. Producer April, come over here. Tell us three songs that you're going to contribute to the iMix.
He said one of mine was Zeppelin. I love
All right, so
Stairway.
She can do the Talking Heads.
Can I change mine to Spice Girls?
For Talking Heads, I like Psycho Killer.
All right.
I love Dire Maker from Led Zeppelin. That's like one of my favorites. So mellow and chill, but I love it.
Okay.
Dave? Zeppelin's making a comeback.
Dave?
This is a blast. I love your choices. Excellent.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you.
Okay, first, anything off Toto 4. Those guys know how to play.
Pick one.
Oh, pick one.
So Can't Hold You Back Now. It's the big ballad, the French horns, great. The real band. Number two would be Richard Page, Simple Life. Richard Page was the lead singer of Mr. Mister, did their good. Matinee. Third would be Toy Matinee is awesome. Yeah. I would say third would be Alison Krauss, Gravity.
Yeah.
Unbelievable mix with all the guitars and mandolin and banjo and no drums, and I completely love her music.
Wow. Well, that's great. Those are all good choices. All right, I'll give you my three.
Here we go. Ready?
No, the first one is Saga. Remember the band Saga?
Good God, man.
Saga, when I was in high school.
How old are you?
I'm right there with him. I mean, when I was in high school.
I do too, but I had to say that.
Yeah, okay.
On their album, there's a song called Time's Up that just really, they really sparked my whole interest in audio and electronics in synthesizers, because they were doing stuff with keyboards and synths that was way ahead of their time. But Saga would be my first one. They'd
Do you
probably
still have the ill-fitting Saga t-shirt to wear while you're listening to this?
But the other one that I'm going to go is BT. BT, he had a tremendous influence. You're going to sense an electronic theme here. Uh-huh. Moments Still Life, Never Come Back Down was kind of the hit off that, and it just, you know, he did a lot of great stuff with stutter edits, and he just really pushed, you know, electronic music and gave it a really melodic sense and did some really interesting things with just sound. And you know, I started reading a lot of articles, and he starts talking about all these different instruments that he was using, and he still uses, you know, Kima, things that are just out there. And so, but in a really musical way, it's almost like if one of the famous composers, Beethoven or Mozart, was going to be around, you know, he'd be doing that kind of stuff, that orchestration and electronic mix. And then the last one is Michael W. Smith, great songwriter. He's a Christian artist, but he has, you know, 25 albums out or something like that. And he's just really consistent with his songwriting. Wrote a song called This Is Your Time when they had the shooting at the high school over in Colorado.
Columbine.
Yep, yeah. The Columbine. Just really inspirational, and he is such a consistent songwriter and just really uplifting, really positive message. And those are my three.
This is going to be one eclectic mix.
I know. Yeah.
Sheesh. But Michael W. Smith and Zeppelin. They never toured together, right?
No, but maybe they should.
You know, there's actually a good tune that just came out. We were going to put it in one of the movies, Valley of Ella. We did. But I don't think we ended up using it. But Foo Fighters just came out, and he did a piano tune. I think it's called Coming Home. And it's an amazing tune.
I forgot Learn to Fly, Foo Fighters. I love that song.
Oh, that is a good song.
That's a great song. See?
All right, you know what, guys? Let's just round it up. No, we're going to end right now with three songs that as a group. You know, I think Foo Fighters, Learn to Fly is
great. Learn to Fly once in a lifetime. Cool. Are we getting this Talking Heads?
Oh, okay, Talking Heads once in a lifetime. What about The Police?
But that's the thing. Like, there were so many bands. So, like, Yes, and even Pink Floyd for me. I couldn't pick a song, though. Like,
I was going to
have
money.
We've got The Floyd, so Police is definitely.
No one mentioned
What about Eric Clapton? Acoustic version of
What About Him?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so hold on. First, I like the Foo Fighters, the Learn to Fly. That'll cover that melodic rock genre that's that alternative melodic rock genre. So we'll do that, Learn to Fly. Next one, We got two more spots. We're going to do two more spots.
What about like an iconic band? I thought myself, like Pink Floyd was one. I thought The Police was actually a three-piece that kicked
Walking on the Moon.
Walking on the Moon. There you go.
That's a great one because I think they've, I know they've influenced my love of music. So absolutely. Okay. Police, Walking on the Moon.
What about Queen? We haven't got the
Bohemian Rhapsody. Bohemian Rhapsody.
There you go. Bohemian Rhapsody.
No, that has to be there.
Yeah. You can't,
you can't leave that out.
Especially with all this.
The best voice in rock music.
Talk about a record that you could not create today. I mean, the fact that they were forced to do all the bouncing and comping and everything else.
All right.
Is why that record sounds
That's it. That's the last one.
Classic. Right. Yeah. The other day, I listened to it. I had a glass of wine. I'm going, man, that's actually a pretty good song.
Well, hey, you know what? We're running over, so we're going to.
Really?
But I just want to thank Dave. Dave, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. You guys are great.
You added a lot, and we appreciate your songs. And one more time, if you want to hit Potato Salad, you want to get the CD, it's on CD Baby.
Go to CDBaby.com or PotatoSaladMusic.com.
Yeah, and you got to check it out because it's a great, especially like jazz, you like fusion, you know, it's great. If you're into heavy metal, not so much. But
now, what do you get if you go to PotatoSalad.com?
It's probably potato salad recipes.
I'm just because obviously it was taken.
We tried to get it, but none of them were as good as my mom's recipes. So right. We passed.
Are you going to be playing anywhere, gigging anywhere locally in the LA area or anything?
Yeah, the band plays typically four or five times a year at a place called The Press in Claremont, California.
Great.
We took a little break through the holidays. We're doing some other gigs. We all worked on Yuletide Blend. That's a Christmas CD. It just came out. So.
Oh, yeah, and that's actually really good. I mean, I heard the track with Drummer Boy.
Oh, yeah.
With Greg Bissonette.
Oh, yeah. That was out of control.
Brilliant. Yep. And where can they get that? They can get that on
YuletideBlend.com.
YuletideBlend.com. It's a great Christmas CD. So we'll have to do that. Thank you so much. Since this is our end of the year show, I'm going to go really quick. Anybody have any New Year's resolutions for next year?
I have a New Year's resolution for you because this year for me was all about changing around the studio, not just getting new furniture, but changing a bunch of gear. I put in the D-Control console. You know, there was a lot of changes. Got a lot of analog front end stuff to go. With the D-Control. And so this year was about kind of figuring out what I wanted to do technically in the future. And it was a lot of ordering stuff and designing stuff and waiting for stuff. And that really takes you away from the creative side of things. And I found myself for weeks on end just being distracted by stuff that had nothing to do with making music or working on film or whatever. Now I want next year, now that everything is basically in and figured out, I'm not sorry that I spent the year kind of redoing my setup and coming up with new ways to do things, but I'm really making a resolution next year to be using all the stuff and to try to put the whole design phase behind me and just focus on the creativity.
Great. Andrew, next year, any resolutions? Anything you're going to do in audio?
Produce some rock.
Great.
Yeah.
That's it.
Your own productions? You're going to find...
That's what I want to... Yeah. That's for... I've worked
on
a lot
old
of
bands
stuff this
we
year.
Do you want old
bands? No. That's what I want to do. I'm going to... Find a couple of bands and record them and make it loud.
Great. Dave, any resolutions next year? Anything you want to do next year?
I keep doing what I'm doing, playing more music and having fun doing it.
Great.
Yeah.
And Scott, next year, any resolutions? Aww. Anything you're going to do next year?
I think I want to do actually more music. Just put together a little music rig. And also I want to get back into, you get to the point where you know the gear so well that you're used to doing things a certain way. I want to break all the rules again, and I want to look at gear in a totally different way and get creative and start figuring out ways of doing things outside the box and just, you know, sometimes you just want to play with the gear and not do what you know, but do what, you know, explore. So exploring.
Great.
Very cool.
Every now and then, go and crack the manual to a piece of gear you've been using for a long time, and you'll find some things you either forgot about it or never knew about.
Or combining certain things in a totally different way.
That's true.
Bobby.
Yes, sir.
Any resolutions, anything you're going to do next year?
Yes. Tomorrow I'm starting a pilot recording for a new innovative string library, which is for musicians. And my partner and I, we're doing a very special kind of string library. Which is kind of interesting, and that's nothing to do with music other than just something for ourselves. So we got a little thing, yeah.
Great.
Well, I wasn't going to tell you this, but remember last year he got the gold wear and I didn't? Well, I'm up for another one this year, so hopefully.
Really?
It's in New York this time, so if I fly over there, I better get something, otherwise I'm.
Yeah, I had one thing nominated, but I don't think I get a statue even if it wins. So.
Oh, really?
The U2 song I mixed is up for best pop. Whatever.
Oh, great.
So you wouldn't get anything?
But I don't think so. No, I think it's only the
and
album.
Which song
ones.
Was it?
Window in the Skies.
Oh.
Wow, that's great. Great. Congratulations. Well, my resolutions for next year, number one, I have started another podcast. It's practicalautism.com. And that's actually where I met Dave. And so it was pretty cool to find a musician have a lot in common. Mm-hmm. So it's for parents of autistic kids. So I'm going to be doing that, and hopefully that's going to grow. And the other thing that I want to do is next year I want to get back into live music. And so I want to put together a band consisting of two laptops, a guitar player, and a singer. And actually, that's a person behind each laptop. I'll be on one laptop, and I'll have somebody else behind another laptop, and then a guitar player, because you really can't do guitar on a laptop.
See these kids of today, I'm going to put together a band, and what's going to be in it? Two laptops. Like,
yeah, but
what instrument do you play?
No,
I'm the Apple.
But you know what?
I play laptop.
It's it'd be laptop with controllers. It's not just going to be just a laptop. No, it'll definitely be some controllers. I just want to do something kind of fun, and if Ken wants to help me with the guitar part, because he's a really good guitar player. But
he's Ken a good guitar player?
Yeah, Ken is a good
dude. Didn't know that.
So that's next year, so we'll see how it goes. All right, gang. Well, hey, we're going to take a break after this podcast, so we're not going to post for about 4 weeks because everybody has a lot of stuff at the end of the year, and then we're going to go into NAMM. It's just going to get kind of busy.
It's
so,
are we doing another one before NAMM, or are we going to be after
NAMM? No, the next show is going to be right after NAMM, just so you know, so we can all report on what we've done. But I want to thank Ken for engineering.
Yay, Ken!
And April.
Yay!
So if you have any questions that you want answered in about 4 weeks, you can email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Or you can also reach us on our MySpace page. That's myspace.com/audionowcast. All right. Well, from myself and the rest of the guys, have a great holiday season. A Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus. Am I missing anything?
Don't worry about it.
You'll never
get Jingle bells. So have a great one. Whatever you got, have a good one.
And go steal. Merry Christmas. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.